All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the American Vindicta Show. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We have with us today my instructor and other partner, Mr. Jamie Walden, who helped me out with this weekend's active shooter awareness and reaction course. Now, Jamie and I have paired up to teach this course because between us, you know, we got anywhere between 30 and 40 years worth of operational experience with firearms, being in other countries, dangerous situations. We almost have a identical background, except Jamie has the added addition of a lot of medical background. So, you know, between Jamie and I, we put on a course this weekend at Ready Made Resources. So thank you very much, Robert Griswold, for hosting us. And we wanted to give you an active shooter awareness and reaction after action review. And basically what that is, we're just going to tell you what happened with the course, what we saw, training scars that we got, that we ran into, how do we think we could do this better, and just give an overall information as to why we think this training is so important, especially after just training people. Now, before I let Jamie on, I just want you to know, training should take priority in your life. If you own 50 rifles in your safe and you don't train with them, you're wrong. Sell some of your rifles, go get some good training. I don't care who it's from. It could be from us, it could be from somebody else. But you should be training every chance you get. People save up a lot of money to go on vacations. They save up a lot of time and leave to go on vacations. I get that. But at least one or two times a year, you should be going to somebody you don't know and getting new training, because you're going to see different perspectives. You're going to see the different techniques and tactics and procedures that various different guys use. And we're talking about, you know, all different types of expertise that are out there. So get out there and get as much training as possible. Jamie, how do you think the training went this weekend?
Yeah, man, real quick on that. Let me add to that. I practice what I preach, and I try to at least one time a year go to a training thing. And I am a trainer. I've been traveling the country for the last almost 4 years doing family emergency preparedness seminars, you know, teaching whole big groups of people, stadiums of people. I've trained literally stadiums of Peshmerga over in Iraqi Kurdistan and stuff like that. You know, guys, like, we've trained everywhere. I've trained different special forces units from other places, law enforcement, you name it. And even with that, I still go to other guys' training, no-namers and big-namers. And I'm there to learn. Like, we, you know, we kept telling people all weekend is, listen, we don't have it figured out. It is you're constantly building on the basics. So that's the whole thing that makes a special operator special, is their mastery of the basics, right? It's doing that same thing over and over and over again. So anyways, that's a good point. Just wanted to reiterate that, the value of training in whatever way it looks. And the key, and to hone in on that, this is something that Doug and I have talked about multiple times throughout the weekend. We made a big effort to stress this. Not everybody should be gun trained. Not everybody should be. You don't, there, and not every citizen in a nation or in a kingdom, right, in a realm, is a part of a militaristic or defensive arm of that thing. You have all kinds of activities that are being conducted within the context of a kingdom or a nation state, right? And so if you're an IT, be like master IT and use it to benefit other people. And if you're, you know, mechanically minded, if you're electrical engineer, if you're whatever, then use that. If you're a carpenter, if you have a medical background, right, whatever it is, not everybody has to be a a gun toter and some gunfighter, right? That's one of the number one things that YouTube has done to obliterate, and actually create major faulty self-actualization and major actual threats to people around them is all the high-speed three-gunning Instagram, you know, picture popping dudes all over the internet, and everybody watches it and they go, that's sexy. That's cool, guy. I want to do that. And Doug, what did we see on the range this weekend? Half of them should have never even showed up to that course. Half of them shouldn't have been there. Not that we weren't glad we're there, not that we're glad that they're there to train, but to you can identify within a very short period of time in a training evolution that this is not for you, and it's probably never going to be for you. Now we'll give you all that we have. We'll be poured out for you. We want to make you safe, but it's all about plowing that lane that you've been given to plow. You plow your lane, we'll plow our lane, right? So anything, just a side notice, training doesn't necessarily mean firearms, 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 firearms. You are training to be an asset rather than a liability in somebody else's worst day. That's what you're training to. That's the bar that should be set. I want to be an asset, not a liability. And whatever that person's worst day is, maybe it's emotional support, maybe it's medical, maybe it's incident command type of stuff, right? Maybe it's intelligence gathering. Maybe you have been through enough training through, there's all kinds of retired CIA guys and different intelligence agencies that give courses where you are a master witness. You know how to collect data, collect intel, identify very unique aspects of what's going on around, and you are going to be an expert witness to the law enforcement show up on scene going, what's going on? Who's the threat, right? So anyways, just to reiterate, that is a good point you touched on.
Well,
and you know, if you guys can't hear it in our voice, we're smoked. Like, we just both, I don't know what time you got back last night after like 14-hour drive as in the airport. So it was like 6 days of like, I don't know if anybody's trained in East Tennessee in early September, late August. It was like freaking jungle warfare school out there, dude. It was miserable. It was miserable out there.
Yeah. No, that 14-hour drive turned to a 16.5-hour drive.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Thank you to Memphis, Tennessee and their traffic. You know, for everyone who showed up, we're not digging on anybody, by the way.
No, not at all.
This isn't a dig on anybody. This is just realistic, you know, speaking. And I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. Everyone who showed up is more than anyone else who did.
Absolutely.
There were 25 seats available, you know, and we had 13 dudes show up, put the – and, hey, do you think one guy didn't put their heart and soul in that training?
No way. And that's what I appreciate. You know, we spoke to that there as a whole class. And by the way, let me reaffirm, I'm not saying anything as a dig is half the guys shouldn't have been there. What I'm saying is to be actively creating a network of assets to the world around us. We need to identify our strengths and our weaknesses, right? Our critical vulnerabilities versus our center of gravity. So it's like, dude, I'm glad you're here.
Let's talk about that fireside chat. The fireside chat that we had with two of the guys. One was a computer engineer and one was a an electrical operator. He was another engineer.
And then he's running hydroelectric dams, right?
Yeah. And then we have another guy who's he's a volunteer in various different things, and didn't really get to know too much about him, but we know that he's kind of a networking guru, right? So we had this conversation because one of the guys got upset, and righteously so. Everybody should be righteously upset with this government and with this country, and the way that it's turned. So one of the guys says, hey, you know, what do we do about this country? What can I do? And what Jamie and I tried to describe is that, you know, you can't fix the government. You can't fix crazy people. You can't stop crime. You're not going to stop the next 9/11. You're not going to be there when someone gets kidnapped. You know, you need to do you. You need to fix you, get in shape, continue to train, worry about your own AO, your own area of operations, which means as far as your gas tank can go. If you don't know your neighbors, get out and know your neighbors. That's like number one, know your neighbors. And you'll know whether or not you should be conversing with them or not, right? So the other thing is that, you know, they're like, well, you know, I came to this training so, you know, so that I could be an asset, not a liability. Like, hey, Roger that. You're being an asset by being at this training because you're learning basic fundamentals of marksmanship, basic fundamentals of tactics. You're using your communication. You learn de-escalation. You learn how to manipulate your weapon around thresholds and that are dangerous, like an open doorway or a hallway. These are things that if you've never experienced before are very alien to most people. Violence is very alien to most people. Oh, and then by the way, you got to get in a gunfight with me. So, you know, you actually get real rounds on target, which is shooting back at you. So what you need to worry about is keeping the dam going. And you, as the technical engineer, when the computers fall short at the electric dam, you need to be the master of your game, making sure that that thing's running. The guy who's the engineer of the dam, you need to make sure that you are healthy enough to keep that dam going. Because when everything goes down, when we do lose the grid, when Russia and China do decide to invade, when the Civil War eventually happens, we'll be reliant upon our tribalistic communities, because everything breaks down to a tribe. Everything will break. It'll break down into racial tribes. It'll break down into occupational tribes. You don't think cops won't hang out with cops? Absolutely. Cops, firefighters, the first responders, the military dudes, they'll all be right here. And then everybody else will be slinky in effect, and trying to be, you know, whatever it is that they can be to the community, but be something, which means that don't be a liability. Don't be the meth head that everyone has to babysit.
You know? Yeah, don't be the overweight guy that can't even walk a mile, right? But yet all you do is watch gun YouTube videos. That means nothing. And the big skin, it means nothing. And you know, I think if the summation of what, you know, we really tried to reinforce was A off character. And B off, I say A off, B off, C off instead of 1, 2, 3. It's more fun, right? A off is character and resiliency, and really that guttural warrior spirit, a warrior spirit, not in the sense of a gunfighter, but that warrior spirit in the sense of selfless sacrifice. That's what we mean by warrior spirit. Somebody who's so in tune that they're willing to be the only one who runs down that hallway when law enforcement is being told to hold and cordon for over an hour, because of your warrior spirit, which those says, I'm willing to lay down my life for others, goes in there, right? And so one was the AOF was the character building attribute was a big focus of the weekend. And two was intentionality in everything that you do, whether it's with your families, with your wives, with your children, with your grandchildren, with your adult children, with your coworkers, intentionality and character, intentionality and warrior spirit, intentionality in the lane that you have been given to plow, intentionality in it. You better maximize and you better give God a return on his investment in you, whatever he's gifted you with. So however you're wired, you better be very intentional in it, because I'm going to need you. And then you need guys like Doug and I, right? And so not everybody should be plowing the same lane. And it's just something we keyed into. So anyways, yeah, man, we can get into some of the after actions review on how the training went. I think some of the big things to hit on is, one, it was amazing who came out. Super side note, super cool. Young dude with his seven month pregnant wife came. They had a vacation planned. What are they, like late 20s or something, maybe mid 20s? They had a vacation planned and they overlapped with the training. They scrapped the vacation and came with no AC in their car, right? And stayed at the training for 3 days straight with a 7 month pregnant wife. Cause he said, I just think that this has value. This has value to us. That was super cool. We had an active duty SRT member from a sheriff's department. We had an 18 Delta Green Beret from the Army there. We had guys with very varying backgrounds and different things. And what was neat is they all came because they wanted the value of it. We had guys that were older, guys that were younger. We had guys that were mid 60s and even a little bit over, and everywhere in between, even in a small group. So that should be super encouraging, because it shows that no matter what your estate is in life or your socioeconomic status in life is, these people were willing, they had counted the cost, they were willing to do whatever it took to up their game so that they could know how to respond in an active shooter type of situation, whether it was applying first aid, administering aid, conducting an MCI, a mass casualty incident, being able to rightly triage patients, being an asset to local law enforcement and fire EMS or first responders on scene, and also having the training and the exposure to how to one man room clearing, to push into a room to get rid of the threat that may be coming against innocence, right? And I think one of the key things too that's so huge that we kept getting comments on regularly was the power of sensory immersion training. Doug, you want to hit that up?
So, you know, we deployed three or four smoke bombs that Robert gave us, and they were nasty.
Yeah, they're mil-spec smoke grenades, and they were pretty nasty. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was coughing that stuff up for, you know, up until like this morning. But, you know, it's the fog of war, man. We can't really replicate your fog of war. I can't replicate your tunnel vision during the active shooter, during the active killer. You know, I can't replicate your auditory and visual exclusion when you don't hear what you should be, people screaming around you. You don't see the people dying around you. I can't really replicate that for the incident that you're eventually going to wind up in. But you can train on it with us, and we can walk you through the baby steps of how to handle the situation. You know what the main thing that we keyed on was? Not, you know, snooping and pooping through a doorway and being fast and dominating the room and, you know, failure drilling every single thing.
Yeah, we're not training breachers. We're not training guys to be in a stack.
It was literally teaching people just how to walk with a gun, how to breathe, how to think, how to evaluate the threshold of the doorway, why you don't want to stand in the doorway, how to pie that doorway. Everything was a exploratory approach to this fundamental that you and I got 15 years or more doing in real life. And we literally just told people, just walk, just act normal, be using this. You know how many times we had to correct people who would be walking through the hallway, walking into the room, and their gun is down, pointed at the deck. Like the bat, what are you going to do? Shoot the bad guy's toes off? You know, bring the gun back into the face. How many different times we said, bring the gun back into the face. Keep it within your eye line. Keep it within your workspace. You know, whenever we actually started to shoot with the airsoft guns, how many different guns went down? And every single gun that went down, you know what not one person did? They never took that weapon and looked at the breach and then fixed the whatever, you know, malfunction that it was.
Yeah, they the immediate action guys weren't there. Yeah,
they did nothing. But this comes to a level of training that they don't have. And I want to say this blanket statement. I'm not poking fun at anybody. I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad. We're not saying we're the operators of the universe. This is just pure fact. 90% of Americans are not trained to the level that they think of in their mind. And then let's say 9% more that own the weapons that say, I'm ready for the Civil War. I'm ready for all this crazy stuff that, you know, everyone makes you believe is going to happen so they can sell more buckets of food and more freaking this and more of that. When it comes right down to it, you don't have the training for proper muscle discipline. Your weapons don't work on the firing line because you never test them. Your bullets are not working. You don't have the proper gear. You don't know how to walk with a gun. You can't reload the gun whenever it goes into a malfunction. And you're going to tell me you're ready for just an active shooter? Oh, and the Civil War? And for the Russians and the Chinese, come on, guys. This is where we try to tell you common sense. Common sense tells you if you want to be better, you have to train. If you want to know how to do this, you need to come to guys like me and Jamie. I mean, Jamie, I don't know how to build a computer, but one of those dudes there had been doing it since he was a kid. If I want to.
Oh, dude, I'm like a Neanderthal. Yeah, I'll just smash my computer. One of the things I was thinking of that is very unique that training always exposes is is making that major physiological, it's all, how much time have we spent on physiology, right? Physiology and psychology. That's 95% of the battle is physiology and psychology every time.
Yep.
And so one of the major juxtapositions that we always see in training is going from that flat range walkthrough, right? Or like we were doing with room clearing with our walls and our rooms and our hallways and our center fed and both corner fed types of rooms and working day doors and getting through those fatal fronts and stuff like that. As we walk through it, you know, probably about 15 to 20 times per guy before we added the smallest degree of physiological and psychological change, as in me yelling in their ear, me pleading for help, right? Like doing some role player work and laying hands on them as they're trying to walk. And then we pop a smoke, right? And then we do whatever. And you would see they were walking through it pretty smooth. Everybody's getting it pretty smooth. They can do it on a flat range. As soon as you add even the smallest level of increase, or I guess decrease of resiliency, all those fundamentals go out the window, which is why it's so critical. We can't speak to enough as mastering the basics, mastering the basics, mastering the basics, you know, getting that eye on the sights, right? Eye, muzzle, target in different places, your footwork, your foot movement, your economy of motion, how your hips are moving, how your feet are working, right? This baseline platform of even your shooting platform. And when you master that, it shouldn't matter what layers of psychological or physiological responses that we can possibly try to produce in you. It's all going to be the same. And what was cool is as we built on it, right? We do crawl, walk, run kind of training. As we built on it, Doug, what was the accuracy of center mass shooting with, we had auditory stuff going, right? We were doing as much full sensory immersion as we could. We had auditory, we had visual, and we had physical touch, right? We had smoke, screaming, yelling, and recorded battlefield noises going on at the same time. I mean, the smoke was so thick you couldn't see anything. We're just trying to up that fog of war type of scenario. And so after drilling those fundamentals and working those out, with guys that have no, there was only two or three guys that have been shooters, right? For professional, all the rest were civilians. What was their accuracy of center mass hitting in that hostile environment with the fog of war going on around them?
90% of them always hit center mass. Every single one of them made consecutive headshots, which really surprised me.
I was surprised too.
Yeah. At least half of them, whenever I would actually, you know, return fire, or I would actually ambush them before they came into the room. And then I would take off a run. A lot of them, like Big Doc, who showed up, him and his son, tagged me down the side, and from about here, I don't know if you can see the bruising all the way from here, but from here all the way down, it's just bruises. I must have been hit.
He was getting headshots on you every time he entered the room. He's getting headshots on you.
But here's the thing, though, and training scar for a lot of guys who don't understand this. They over-penetrated the room.
Yeah, every single one of them did.
Every single one of them over-penetrated the room, and they came towards me. You know, they didn't try to keep that healthy space. Why do you need to walk towards me? You know, the bullet travels 2,000 feet per second. It's going to beat you there, you know?
Yeah.
But this, once again, that's basic fundamentals of marksmanship. And how much did we work on guys just lining up their sights, just like this? Line up your sights. Get your gun in your eyes, up into your workspace. You know, one of the problems, and, you know, we started to go through this whenever we did the live fire range, was, you know, the amount of dwell time that it takes from a low alert and a high alert for some guys to come up to here and then pull the trigger. You know, for professionals who've done it for a long time, we're pretty fast. Most of us, we're pretty fast, right?
Let me just get this out on the air so everybody knows it. Doug and I did a pistol battle on the tree and he smoked me. let's just get it out of there. But it's my new RMR, man. That's what it is. I'm sure it wasn't my skill. It's what's my fun, RMR.
What's is funny as I zero. Offered you my gun to do it again. You told me no.
yeah.
But you know, this is the training. This is the training portion, right? Going from like a low search or low alert and then coming up. I mean, that dwell time, if you enter a room and, you know, whoever the suspect is, subject, whatever, they already have a pistol pointed at you and you come in like this. I mean, that millisecond, it's all it takes to pull the trigger. And it takes me a millisecond to pull the trigger at your face. And it's going to take you a millisecond to recognize what the hell's about to happen, raise your gun, and then fire. You're behind on the time, and it may be a second and a half, and then bam, right? So that's why this consecutive training. I mean, each person probably ran 30 iterations coming in that room. And I got shot a lot, like a lot.
Yeah, and I think what's good for listeners to know and understand is like it's the course itself is an all hazards approach, right? So you have
a shooter's course.
Right. It's not a shooter's course. It's an all hazards approach, which has more value than just being a shooter's course. And I'm big on that. I'm big on not honing in on marksmanship and keyholing your shots. I want you to be able to deploy and employ that firearm under stress. That's what I want. I don't care about flat range. I don't care about keyholing shots. And so the way that, and for those of you, for the listeners that don't know, you know, Doug was a DHS and both civilian and other three-letter alphabet soup, different levels of federal law enforcement agency instructor on active shooter awareness and active shooter response. This is his wheelhouse. I have a background in teaching combat pistol, combat rifle, and SASL, security and support operations for the Marine Corps and elsewhere all around the nation and stuff like that. And what was unique is because of our backgrounds and even me switching over from law enforcement and going into fire rescue is that background experience lends itself to it truly being an all hazards approach. So as we're working through problems, as we're working through our critical learning objectives, and even as we're working through the didactic portion, right, like the classroom portion, before we move into practical app, it's covering the why. Why does this important? Why does this have value? Doug breaks down so many real world, real time events where he has either been a part of active shooter, actor killing events, or has directly been in league with the other law enforcement officers that were first on scene or responding officers, anything from the Las Vegas shooting to some of the church shootings to even one that's very personal and to you and your family, a church shooting down there in Texas. And so it brings together the fullness of an all hazards approach to training that isn't about checking boxes, bang, bang, ooh, close your group up tighter, but it actually gives you the why and the ability to work on your feet and understand the significance of the threat and then how to appropriately respond to a threat. And then also how to be an asset to law enforcement, EMS, firefighters, first responders, triage, mass casualty incidents, providing support operations for things that are going on. How it's an all hazards approach. And I think that's one of the critical components that distinguishes even this was the first course you and I have ever done together. We've never instructed together, but we didn't even really have to communicate about it ahead of time. It just worked because that's how we're both wired, right? We're not wired for the three gunning, you know, high speed, hit the buzzer, get your shots on steel kind of training. But it's like, no, I don't really care about that. What I care about is what I've seen go down in the real world, how that pans out from battlefields to the homeland, from malls to churches, from your neighborhood to a home invasion in the middle of the night, right? From your little kid's school to your grandkid's school to a movie theater or what, and everywhere in between, right? To a country western concert. It's like, and everywhere in between, to a vehicle rollover, to a bus accident, right? To a rolling brownout in California because they can't support the grid and they're trying to force people into this green movement, right? It's all these layers are occurring at the same time. And so that's why with proper training, or at least immersion training, where when it happens to you, it will not have been the first time you've seen it or experienced it or thought about it or worked out some of the problems. It won't be your first time. You have seen it in training. Your mind is already prepared with a degree of resiliency to respond, not and rather than lock up and become a liability because of your fear responses, because of your physiological responses, or because of your inadequacy and an ability to respond appropriately. So I just think that that's an important distinction to make.
I think the next training evolution that we do with this, I'm actually probably going to include a lot more, like you and I were talking about, a lot more medical, a lot more hands-on medical. I think we all agree there needs to probably be more medical than gunfighting, because it's always like that. Gunfights don't last very long, you know,
and they don't happen very often.
They don't happen.
But you'll come up on medical emergencies all the time in your life. But have you ever seen somebody fire a firearm in the civilian world?
If you live in some of these, you know, dystopian cities in America, if you live on the Southwest border, you ever been to the Mexican border? Yeah, you hear gunfights continuously. But, you know, I'm not going to say it's a rarity in America, because violence is increasing.
Yeah, it is increasing.
When I was given the PowerPoint, it can be dry. It's a 3-hour PowerPoint. It's a corporate level PowerPoint. But I have 60 slides of information to show you things aren't getting better. And no. Jamie, almost every single bit of it was an FBI statistic.
Yeah. Yeah. These are official statistics. These aren't things that are
conspiratorial
or made up or sensational, you know, clickbait type stuff. It's just the reality of what's going on out there. And even the way statisticians compile stuff, it's actually way worse than the official stats that we're working off of, you know? And I think the biggest thing to key on, this is the official statistic as given by former agent Doug Thornton, and this is FBI statistics, is 1,000% increase in gun violence related crimes, mass killings and mass killings and active shooter, 1,000% increase since 2017.
Yep.
That stat, I didn't know that stat. So I'm sitting there listening to Doug teaching and I'm going, oh my goodness, I need to be more diligent on my end on making sure that I am an asset to the citizenry around me, that I don't go, oh, it's so annoying to carry conceal. I'm wearing my board shorts today and flip flops. I don't want to carry. I'm not going to, you know, like I always have an excuse too. So listen, that's why we say we're not guys that say we haven't figured out. We're not some high speed operators trying to throw things down other people's throats. We're just dudes that got the training by the nature of the professions that we chose to enter into. We have employed and deployed that training in real life multiple times over. And then we want to bring that to everybody else. And we need more. And we need to learn more. And we need a little little minutia corrections on all of our basics, TTPs and stuff like that, so that we can be that much more equipped. Because well, like we said regularly throughout the course, whatever your last degree of training is, that's what you're going to fall back on. Or we make it go the other way. And we said, we say that you always train for the fight you're yet not in. Because when it's in your face, when you hear that strange sound and you think it's a firework and your normalcy bias wants to tell you it's a firework, but everything in you knows that it wasn't a firework, right? That you have already trained for the fight you're not yet in. Because when it's in front of you, it's too late. Whatever you have stored up in you at that time is all you're going to have to carry you through to either success or failure at the end of the day. So that's why all this stuff is relevant for you know, there's a lot of people that go, I don't really get it. That's what, right. Especially for me, like, I'm in full-time ministry. I am not ashamed of the gospel whatsoever. Doug can testify that I probably preach the gospel half the weekend as I'm doing gunfighter training.
I loved it.
Because it's who I am, right? And I'm not ashamed of it. And it's all relevant. It's all relevant to being, you know, I hate to use this word because it's like a liberal hipster word, but like to being a good human, to be an asset to humanity, because that's actually what God created you for. And so all this stuff is, it all builds to equipping you to rightly discharge the duties for which you have been foreknown. whatever that may be. And if you fail, I'll tell you what, you see it. I know you've seen it, Doug. There is nothing that will haunt a man or a woman more than when they failed to rise to the challenge when it was in front of their faces. Cowardice, fear, incapacitation. They couldn't control their emotions. They couldn't control the tears or the shaking or the fear or the adrenaline dump. They froze up, they locked up, they cowered, they ran, they hide. That one moment in time of that failing of your flesh haunts people more than anything else.
When we were headed to the airport, you know, I think we should share with people a story that we were talking about. It was too late. We were going to have cigars, but, you know, we were talking about Haiti.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Haiti was a nightmare.
And I told you about the Greek hoplite thesis on the 1,000 deaths of a warrior. You know, the 1,000 little deaths, you know, the inner cowardness, you know, when the phalanx broke, when my shield, you know, moved too far over, my brother was stabbed in the face. Was that my fault? Could I have held it together? Could I have been stronger? Could I have trained more? Could I have paid attention more in training? You know, could I have exercised more? When you know, people were fleeing, could I go over there and stand in front of them with my shield and protect my brother's back? You know, but instead I ran for my own life, you know. That, to me, that is a complete breakdown of the Las Vegas shooting massacre. You know, over 890, almost 900 injuries, over 60 deaths. And when I was given the briefing to everybody, 200 of those injuries were caused by the stampede of people.
By the trampling, yeah.
Trampling on top of each other, trying to run away. We didn't rise to the occasion.
Well, and like you said, too, is 21 out of those 60 deaths were because nobody administered basic first aid and they laid there and bled out and died for hours because nobody understands law enforcement response and nobody understands EMS response. They will not allow EMS in whatsoever until the scene is secure. You're talking hours. People were laying there. And they eventually expired because nobody administered basic first aid, basic, something you can literally learn a half hour.
Yep,
nobody administered it. Right.
And so, you know, pressure bandage, take
just pressure, just kneel on it, just sit on it, do something, right. Put an elbow on it. But these are those things that, you know, are so critical for people to have a right self-awareness of. What are my critical vulnerabilities? Like, where am I lacking? What am I not good at? What do I not have an understanding of? Does the sight of blood make me freak out? You know, how do I handle with loud noises? How do I deal in a day-to-day situation with high stress? I mean, if you're one of those nervous Nancys or whatever that freaks out every time somebody says something not perfectly kind to you, you're probably going to buckle under pressure. And here's an important side note. Again, biblical worldview. I'll never make an apology for believing in my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. It is the cowards that are the first that are tossed into the lake and fire at the end of all things. The cowards. Cowardice is a very, very significant thing to the kingdom of the Lord God Almighty through his son, Jesus Christ. Cowardice is top tier. First ones chucked into the lake of fire because cowardice is all centered on self-preservation. It is selfish. It self-esteems. It is self-centered. Cowardice is all centered on self, self-preservation, self-preservation, self-preservation. But a warrior spirit is all centered on selflessness, selfless sacrifice, laying down one's life, being willing to not spend your money on your stupid bullcrap pro sports package, which most of those dudes are pedophiles. If they're not pedophiles, they have all kinds of other crimes that they're being covered up for. They're the most sickening examples of a man ever as a pro sports athlete. So instead of putting your money on that, selflessness says, I'm going to put my money on training. I'm going to put my money on more ammo. I'm going to spend time to have some improvement, self-improvement, because I know I'm weak in this area and I don't want to falter under the pressures of trouble. I'm going to go take a medical course. I'm going to go get my wilderness EMT or my EMT basic, or even just a first aid course, you know, whatever it is. Right. So that's why you have this huge juxtaposition of the of the spirit of a coward versus the spirit of a warrior. And a spirit of warrior has absolutely nothing to do with a bloodlust. I hate when that connotation is associated with warriors. The warrior spirit is actually completely divergent and utterly nullifies a bloodlust type of spirit. It is truly selfless. It's willing to sweat when nobody else will, be uncomfortable when everybody else is comfortable, be willing to bleed when everybody else is protecting themselves. It's willing to stand when everybody else sits, and it's willing to fight when everybody else is running. Why? For themselves? For vanity? No, it's for that other guy, for those children over there, for the screams and the horrors, for the families that are going to spend every Christmas for the next 25 years without that person, for that car upside down in the ditch and the teenage girl is in there screaming and crying frantically, that you could go in there and speak to her with a quiet confidence to let her know and assure her that she's going to be okay. You're here and help is on its way. Like, that's what it looks like to operate from a warrior spirit. And these are the things that we hone in on the whole time we're training. You can take a monkey and teach him basic firearms training and marksmanship. You really can. It's not a big deal.
Yep.
But the mindset.
FBI.
Yeah. But the mindset to operate in a hostile environment or through the fog of war, that takes tons of training to overcome your physiological response. That's what the training is all about.
And I want to back up my statement. I poke fun at the FBI all the time, just because in our world, the FBI are a bunch of pencil pushers who are always 30 feet behind you whenever you're serving a warrant. Not all of them are that way. A lot of them are very good people who are patriotic. And actually, there's quite a bit of them who are patriots and veterans. However, I disagree with your agency. But let's talk about a story. One of the things that we did a lot, maybe too much, while we were there giving the training, is that we were giving these dialogues and stories, sharing experiences that we had in real life combat or within law enforcement, or, you know, just rare extreme scenarios that not everybody's put into, and how we handled it, how we, you know, did it good or did we do bad. I think one of the most honest things that instructors can do, Jamie, is when they tell people where they messed up.
You know, yeah, dude.
I gave probably five or six pretty good examples of where this kid messed up before. I mean, I remember like the first time I served a warrant, and it was in this little row home in Northern Philly, which if you live in Northern Philadelphia, you know what I mean by the row home. And in Northern Philadelphia, in the crime ridden gang zone, you know how bad that area is. I had to walk up a stairs in a house that didn't have any freaking electricity and a stairway that doesn't fit my 3 foot wideness. So I'm like this, walking up a stairway, and I'm using the light that's on my pistol. And guess what I hadn't done? I hadn't checked my batteries lately. Pistol light goes out. I have to grab my light on my belt. And by the time I'm doing this and this, I fail. Face first on those freaking steps, and then went boop, 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 boop all the way down. Almost knocked down the whole stack behind me because I'm going to be the one, man. I'm the big bad guy, right? You could have easily just came and popped me right in the top of the head and I'd be done. But you know, these are the things that, you know, how many thousands of times have I walked upstairs with a gun in my hand, never looked at the stairs, never fail, especially in Iraq, you know, never fail. And then the one time, my first warrant, I freaking eat dirt. So, you know, even to the best of us, it's these freak things are going to happen. But that's why we were telling people, work through it. Work through your problem. Guys who came into the room and they slipped and they fell, stand up, work through your problem. I'm the bad guy. If I wanted to envelop on 90% of those guys and just run up and put my gun in their face, I could have. But instead, I allowed them to come into the room and then to work through the environment. The smoke was thick. The adrenaline was pumping. They're running through the room. They're walking through the room. They're confused. They're scared. They don't know what they're doing. But you know what? Every one of those guys at least did something, which is better than 99% of people who just stare there doe-eyed and you know the whole freaking DHS thing, run, hide, or fight, you know, And I don't want to say this. This is just an after action review, guys. With a lot of these big massacre events that I was covering there, like let's just say Las Vegas, because that is the one that broke the precedence of the world when it comes to active shooters. You know, those people who ran, they ran away from people who needed aid. The people who hid bled to death.
Yep.
You know, and you, how are you going to fight on the 32nd floor? You know, cops couldn't make the accurate shot. So, you know, active shooter training doesn't always mean actively having a gun in your hand and shooting back. Let me give one more example. The Boston bombing. I was present for the trial because we were doing the protection detail for the trial for the Boston bomber, for the young Sarkov brother. And when he went running through, you know, that portion of Boston, and all the cops, SWAT, SRT, feds, you know, just breaking doors down, no knock warrants on people's houses, trying to find this freaking guy. They almost killed a few people doing that. So here's one of the things that I was training people for active shooter. You may not be the one actively shooting at an active shooter trying to give the best medicine, which is to stop the killer, right? But instead, you actually may be in a gun-free zone and you may have the active shooter happening. And now here comes law enforcement. What are they to do, Jamie? What is it that we always tell them to do? Hands up.
Yep. Yeah. Again, that's being an asset to law enforcement. You are making sure that they can clear their minds and clear you to focus on the threat. Right. And so again, this goes into that all hazards approach. It's an all hazards approach. It's not about being a gunfighter. Dude, YouTube has just freaking YouTube Instagram. And John Wick and Hollywood, they have just ruined people's. There's such a faulty self-actualization. Let me back up a minute too. When we're talking about guys working through problems, this is a little dad knowledge I'm going to drop on you. I've always said that I don't want to train my kids for success. We have such a culture that's all about teaching our kids from the time of birth how to succeed, how to succeed, how to succeed. I, no kidding, specifically train my children how to fail. Because you will do 1,000 times more failing in life than you ever will do succeeding. Everybody, can I get a amen or a roger that, right? Like I want to train people to fail rightly and to fail forward, not to succeed. There's so little successes that we experience in life. That's why we remember them, right? The 2, 3, 4, 5 times in life where you have this major success and that's what you write on your whole life. What about all those failings, all those wrong decisions, all the way you handled the circumstances wrong, all the ways that you could have done it better. And, oh man, I wish I would have said this or I wish I wouldn't have said that, right? And so what we want to do is we don't want to train you to succeed. We want to train you to fail rightly. We want to train you to when your gun fails, when your gun jams, when you overpenetrated a room and you just realized it, when you tripped over a piece of garbage on a thing, when you weren't watching your footwork and whatever, how do you work through that? Because you are going to be failing the whole time, especially when we add full on, no crap, real world sensory immersion. You would not, we were talking off air before we started recording. Like there's one thing we want to invest in more than anything else. And that is a smell generator. That's right. Ladies and gents, a smell generator. There's actually
smell-o-vision is real.
Yes. There's actually certain mil-spec companies that produce smell generators because as both Doug and I will testify, there is nothing that will rock your world more in any situation than the smells, not the sights and not the sounds. The smells will steal your attention, divert your attention, screw with your mind, make you euphoric, and all kinds of weird things go on with smell. So anyways, all that to say is that's what we want to train through is not success, but we want to train you to fail rightly and how to fail forward and to continue to advance through that fog of war.
Hey, let's talk about a fog of war real quick. A real fog of war. Jamie and I were both in the rescue operation for Hurricane Matthew in Haiti. Now, I got employed by a certain philanthropist. I believe we both were, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he employed us both. one of the funny things that we both experienced while we were there is, for one thing, just how damn dangerous Port-au-Prince, Haiti is. That place, that like Port-au-Prince, Haiti, I think is probably one of the most dangerous places in the world. Not only that,
I second that. It's the most dangerous. It's one of the most dangerous places on the face of the earth, hands down. It is a lawless beyond comprehension.
Yeah, what their latest president was just assassinated, so that's like two in a row now. So when I was there, I worked with their law enforcement. With their, I actually got assigned one of their SWAT teams. And you know, here we are. We're talking about a SWAT team. Here's some weapons maintenance stories for you. This one guy, so out of the five-man team, the team leader was the only one who spoke broken English, which was a lifesaver for me. He at least understood what I was saying. He had an AK, and it worked. Another guy had two chrome 1911s or nickel-plated 1911s, all right? One mag was half full. I found out that the other one didn't have bullets in the magazine. And he kept them tucked in the front of his pants with no belt.
Yeah, that's gangster, bro.
Gangster, straight up gangster. You got a freaking gun that's half loaded and one that has no bullets in it, and he's a SWAT team officer. Okay, gets paid like 40 gourds a freaking month to do that job, which is like what, 20 American dollars or something.
Yeah,
and another guy, he was their assault guy. He carried a FAL. You know, 308 FAL. It was so seized up by rust that I literally had to take a hammer and beat the charging handle back. Drop the magazine. There wasn't a round in the chamber, thankfully. And then as I'm looking at the rounds, they've literally turned blue from the amount of
copper.
Corrosion.
Yeah, the copper on the round. Yeah.
From the amount of corrosion. I'm like, this is what you're going to go with me and my principal with, and you know, his wife, and we're going to go into this area called Lakai, and this is where I believe we were at a lot. You and I were at.
Yeah, I ended up in there too.
Yeah, because I was inserting doctors, and then I was able to get who's the one of the contracting groups that was out there. It wasn't Triple Canopy, but we got another one of the contracting groups that lended me a sniper and a radio guy. And so we were employing them, and when we first landed, and this is what we're talking about, when we first landed on that field where we had to land all the planes at for the evac and then for bringing all the resupply logistics, war is logistics. War is like 2% gunfighting and like 98% logistics, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So we're moving bodies in and out and then, you know, bringing in all this food and having to do like route reconnaissance. I remember as soon as we landed the first plane, there was nobody on the field. We had to fly over and shake the wings. And, you know, that let everybody know to get your goats and your cows off the freaking.
Yeah, I remember having to buzz the airfield to get all the goats and stuff off the field so we could land.
Yeah, yeah, they're out there playing soccer. And remember, like, there's a lighthouse because it's at an angle. The whole thing is at this weird hyper angle. There's a lighthouse, so you got to fly and the whole plane's got to go like lean to the right and come back to the left and land at an angle, taxi all the way down. It was ridiculous. So the first time we're there, like two people showed up. The second time we're there, about 20 people showed up. The third, fourth, and fifth, about the sixth time, probably 1,000 people were there. This was within just a matter of like maybe 3 hours, right? And so what we're doing is we're bringing all, you know, water purifiers because everything's destroyed. You know, there's a 30-foot freaking tidal wave that hit. And so we're talking about, you know, extremes with survival. All their cash crops, I believe, was avocado. It was all destroyed. Dudes were walking around with freaking fishing harpoons, axes, freaking knives, machetes, and, you know, and we start handing off all this food to all these people. And next thing you know, these like two elder brothers of this tribe, village, whatever, they start arguing in front of me and my principal and his wife. And they're like, no, you give the food to me, and then it's my place of honor to give the food to the village. And I'm like, I really don't care. Just unload the plane so we can leave. Time is money for us, right? Next thing you know, I see an axe being raised. It's one of the brothers. Next thing you know, the other guy is chicken winging his AK. And I'm like, it's time to leave. It's time to leave, or this is about to be really, really bad. And, you know, we got to consider the fact that just one storm turned a place that was an entire village of people working together, living together, generation upon generation of families. And then 2 weeks into the storm, no power, no fresh water. People had already become gangrenous with a lot of their wounds and infections.
A lot of gangrene from very simple wounds, scratches.
A lot of deaths from the elderly, from the heat. Remember how bad the heat was?
There's bodies everywhere.
Dehydration was bad, not just from the storm surge alone. And these people were ready to kill each other over buckets of food. And these guys were brothers.
And that's why really it's so critical to have that all hazards approach, because it's not about this top tier, you know, counterterrorism, you know, active shooter thing, whatever. Who cares what the origin of that? We've all done our research, right? We're not getting into the details of the origin of how these active shooters come to be. We don't even touch on that. It's such muddied water at this point, but it's the fact that wherever there's humanity, you better be prepared. Humanity is the threat. Law enforcement is not the threat. Wicked governments and bad governments are not the threat. International banking systems are not the threat. They all are in a cursory way, right? We know that they have impact. It is humanity. Wherever there's more than one human being, we've seen it so many times that it goes from lovey-dovey, yeah, bro, you're the best, to I'll murder you and your wife today if it's going to get me 1 ounce more of comfort than what I had yesterday. And it goes down so quick. So when we see these things, like we know we had the issue in Texas with the hard freeze last year, the rolling brownouts getting ready to go on in California, right? We have Ferguson riots for critical infrastructures being impeded, Seattle, Portland, you know, we all know what's been going on up there for a while. Stuff in DC, you know, with their counterfeit demonization of the January 6th event and stuff like that. Is the fact of the matter is that things go bad quick. And when they go bad quick, it's so critical to have the right training, the right mindset, and the right character to know how to adequately navigate that stuff. Because the fog of war is real. And if you haven't even considered it yet, you better consider it. And if you think you can just buy buckets of food because you listen to a podcast and you think it's really important to get, good on you. It's better than having nothing. But I'm telling you what, at the end of the day, that's not going to save you. I mean, side note, same thing in Haiti while we're on Haiti. We got dropped out. We got inserted in there. Same thing, doing medical inserts and provided, you know, personal protection detail for different entities over there. Is I watched pallets of 25-year shelf life food, stuff I would pay thousands of dollars for here, be pushed into the ocean. You want to know why? Because the amount of energy, caloric energy, that it took to figure out how to make that food, because the storm surge had went so far inland that it poisoned all fresh water wells. All of it was worthless.
And all of it,
nobody could generate a fire. Nobody could make a fire. No. Nobody could boil water. Nobody could desalinate water. And we had pallets. I'm talking about a landing craft, a World War II landing craft, 70,000 tons of food and gear. I watched get pushed into the ocean as I'm standing on the deck as personal protection. I watched it get pushed into the ocean because of the caloric intake it would take to make even one little Mylar baggie of food out of those things. Anyways, I say that as a teachable moment to say that faulty self-actuation is a big deal. You have to train for the fog of war, not just buy stuff, not just carry a gun, not just be rah-rah, Second Amendment, blah, blah, blah. You know, all that stuff, I'm telling you what, it means nothing at the end of the day. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you think the summation is of this training then?
Well, just to end on what you just said with the rah-rah, you know, false bravado, Most of that stuff is going to get you in trouble with law enforcement and the government.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely will.
You know, I mean, a lot of those guys beating their chest, talking about wanting to be in a civil war. I talk about civil war all the time, but I always talk about the historical context of how we're going to get there. I don't want to be in a civil war. I don't want to be in a war. Absolutely. You think I want to trade my air conditioning and my refrigerator, my freaking, you know, Panda Express? Absolutely not.
Anybody who's chomping at the bit to me. Yeah, and anybody who's chomping at the bit for a civil war are talking about it as if there's some kind of like glorious thing about it. I would say you better unsubscribe and you better run from those mouthpieces. I'm telling you what, that you better flee from anybody who is operating with that kind of that nasty rhetoric. It is. They have no clue. We haven't recovered from the first Civil War. Have you been to the South? We haven't recovered from I have a degree in history. Doug has a degree in history. Again, we've had a very, very similar run in life. So we're not speaking outside of our scope of practice on these things. When we speak to these things, we have yet to recover from the first Reconstruction era. The United States has not recovered from the scars of that Civil War. It has nothing to do with talking about Civil War. It's talking about the reality of where we're at as a nation with the divisions that are being sowed. And the only way that the divisions can be sowed is if you bite onto the bait. That's the only way that the divisions could be sowed is if you take the bait from the mainstream media, right? So anyways, just to throw that caveat in there.
So I want to give you two quotes. I'm a quote magnet, right? I love quotes. This is from Teddy Roosevelt. The first request of a good citizen in this republic of ours is that he shall be able and willing to pull his own weight. You know what that really means? That doesn't mean go out and buy the Gucciest gear. Doesn't mean go out and buy, you know, all the reloadings. I got buddies of mine that spent like 10 grand in reloading, and I wouldn't take a bullet from them. just me personally. And, you know, we got guys who buy a tremendous amount of stupid stuff. You know, I have a friend of mine. I always ask him, hey, bro, you want to go train? You know, he's former military. He's like, nah, I'm over all that stuff. And I'm like, you know, what do you spend your money on nowadays? Because he makes money. And he's like, oh, man, I spent like $5,000 on this gaming computer. And I'm like, you're a grown man,
dude, a
veteran, and you freaking sit around all day and you play video games. Hey, you know what? You signed the dotted line. You served your time. I get that. You rate it now. However, you really don't. You really don't. I think as men in America, especially godly men, you have a decision. Become a tamed house cat or a lion. That's it. And somewhere in between there, you get pet or you become feared by those who want to be your masters. We live in a time now, Jamie, where, you know, you can literally just go to the Dollar General, my favorite reference because it's the only thing that's close to me where I live. You can go to a Dollar General and literally you can see an improvised explosive device. You could see a terrorist attack. You could see a freaking a vehicle-borne IED, a shootout between the cops and whomever and whatever, a domestic disturbance that you know, is a lover's quarrel that turns really bad. John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer. All these things are happening now with all the law enforcement, with all the lights on, your refrigerator's running. You can go to Walmart and pick up a fried chicken whenever you want. When it's not there, those people, those entities, the John Wayne Gacy's, they get worse. More
come out. Turn off the pharmaceuticals. Turn off all these people whose reality is violence soaked. And hey, by the way, pornography is violence against women. Hey, let me get this caveat. Let me clear out half your listeners right now.
Do it.
Ready for it?
Do it.
If I have very little tolerance for guys that are into pro sports, sorry. I have very little tolerance. No, I have zero tolerance for anybody who's in pornography. I've worked in counter human sex trafficking. Every one of your swipes, you're actively participating in child sex abuse and ritualistic child sacrifice. I have no tolerance for you. I don't care who you are. And there's no excuse for it whatsoever. Oh, I have an accountability partner. Like, dude, zero tolerance. So zero tolerance for pro sports, zero tolerance for any man who says he's a man and looks at pornography. He is actively abusing children and all the lawless things that go beyond that. And I have very little tolerance for adult men who play video games. Those are just my three things. As soon as I hear that that's what somebody's into, any one of those things, you already lost me, man. I have no respect. And everybody has their excuse for why, especially video games and pro sports. There's no excuse for porn whatsoever. Everybody has their, well, I played college this or I played college that, or it's a good, and I'm like, though what you were undergirding, by the way, the Super Bowl is the number one sex trafficking day of the year. And all those reprobate athletes that want to defund police, that want to say you're systemically racist, that want you to hate the color of your skin, that want a Marxist communist revolution, that want millions of dollars. The NFL is a $50 billion a year industry. They pay no taxes, but our government just hired 87,000 IRS agents to come for you. And you love giving all your energy, your time, and your talents to these guys. I just have no time. And video games, dude. Video games are for freaking children. They're for children. Mm-hmm. And maybe bored Marines in the barracks for a little while, right? Okay. But like, if you're past 21 and you're playing video games, something ain't right, homie. You're not loving your wife. You're not leading your family. You're not training your body. You're not actively learning. You are not an asset to the world around you. You are a comfort-driven narcissist lover of self. I have no tolerance for it, dude. Again, may have just pissed off half your listeners. Congratulations, Doug. I just filled your email inbox. But I'm telling you what, I just don't, man. I just don't. And it's like, if you're doing that, praise God for mercy in exposing that so you can throw those things off and start being, have a value added life. And what value are you adding to other people? Not to mention to your own household, right? And all those things are destroyers of authentic manhood. Those are all perfectly designed to completely castrate you from being a true man. Even watching MMA and all that stuff, it's like people, these guys want to live vicariously by watching other guys get in the ring in the fight. Once you go out for jujitsu and just roll around, it doesn't matter if you've never done it before. It'll keep you fit. It'll keep you active. It'll help you network, and it'll give you some basic skills. Quit watching it and go do it, you know? Anyways, there's my soapbox. We should probably wrap this up. I think we're getting a little long, but yeah. lots of teachable moments.
Well, here's the last thing I want to say. And this is a quote from George Washington. It is impossible to rightly govern the world without God and the Bible.
That's it.
And we are not going to fix this government. Look at, you talk about the reprobate nature of the NFL. Last time I saw that he had the beast and the whore riding on top of it. You know, what's her name?
Katy Perry did. Katie, I mean, Perry. Every halftime show is God. A giant satanic ritual.
Show me the last time they did a baptism for the freaking NFL. Show me the last time there was actually a Christian up there who actually sang a Christian song. You know,
last time they supported military and law enforcement at Super Bowl halftime show.
It becomes more vile. It becomes more divisive. And it's, listen, guys, y'all know I'm a history nut. This is no different than when Rome started to die. Nero, yep. Give them more bread and circus. You know, give them tea and cake. We have. I think as Americans, our time has passed to fix this country.
Absolutely, I agree.
You're not going to vote. You're not going to vote it into. And a lot of you, you know, hey, God bless a lot of you out there who have a very. Not pessimistic, optimistic, I guess, view upon the world and the way things could be, that we could pray everything back together again. I don't believe that. That's just me personally. I think as long as we are still killing children and finding a way to kill children, and we're finding a way to suppress the word of God and tear down the Ten Commandments, we're probably not going to be saved, and we're probably not going to pray our way out of it, you know? You can find 10 righteous men in one city. Take care of yourself and the other nine. The whole city's going to freaking burn. Take care of yourself and your family. Dig your well for yourself first before you dig it for the rest of the tribe. That's the problem with America. We rely upon the government for everything. And the day it gets turned off, everybody loses their mind. And then those of you who have had zero training, you're not going to know what to do. I hope you do. I hope God gives you the spirit of situational awareness that you'll know what to do. You'll know where to go. You'll know who to network with. I don't wish bad upon anybody, even people I don't disagree with, Jamie, even people on the left. I don't want to see people hurt anymore.
No, it's horrible, man. There's enough of that going on. Yeah.
I don't want that, but they do. They do want to see you hurt. We have a president right now who's declared more than half the country to be a terrorist. There are legal implications that come with that. And if this man retains power, and if these idiots in the Republican Party don't do something, which, by the way, I don't think they will.
I think they're on board. They're on board with the it's bigger all orchestrated. Agenda, so.
Yeah, these guys.
It's not Democrat versus Republican. People got to get over this bipartisan thing. Their normalcy bias is too thick. It's all of them.
Yeah. All right. Let's wrap this up. We could sit here all day and just divulge. Thanks to everyone who came out to the training. If you do have any questions, you can hit me up at theamericanvindictusshow@gmail.com. Jamie, where can they hit you up if they want any ideas about the training or about that super awesome camp that you've made?
Yeah, they can get a hold of me through omegadynamics.org or calicobuffalobasecamp.com. So either one of those, they can get a hold of me. But if you have nasty grams to send me about the porn and pro sports and video games, you can send all those to American Vindictive Show.
Appreciate that. Call your congressman. They'll care more.
Yeah, right.
Hey, we will be giving out here pretty soon when we're going to stage the next training evolution. It may actually be hosted at your place. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. We're kind of, Doug and I, obviously we just got back late last night, both of us, and we're kind of regrouping. And so we're kind of looking forward to what it would look like to do something towards the end of October here in Southwest Colorado. So just outside Durango. It'll be a heavy focus on an all hazards approach to preparedness with a high focus on active shooter awareness and administering medical first aid. So obviously with that comes hip pocket class after hip pocket class to give you an all hazards approach to emergency situations.
That's right. And what type of facilities do you have out there for people that are available?
Yeah, just so people know here at the camp that I own and run in Colorado, you know, we have 8 cabins, a lodge, men's and women's shower house and bathroom, numerous amounts of acre, you know, very nice facilities. So we're able to do both indoor and outdoor training. And I actually keep everybody in-house here on the property. In-house is in like all-inclusive, right? With the cabins and stuff we have on the property. So it'd be kind of this good fireside chats, sharing meals together and then doing the training together, which generally around mealtime and fire time, that's when the real training happens. Mm-hmm. Cause that's when the intentional conversations occur. There's freedom for the questions to be asked. And, you know, and also for Doug and I to even share our different experiences, real world experiences without, you know, being storytellers, but at the same time, using them contextually for teachable moments.
Do you have RV hookup and places for people?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, and we have RV hookups here as well, too. We have 7 full RV hookups.
So there you go.
And I'm in the Rocky Mountains. So, you know, you get an opportunity to really enjoy the Rocky Mountains, that color change.
Yeah, I think you said you can fit about 60 people. So, you know, for this type of training, the max that you and I can handle is 30. I mean, you know, that's 15 students a piece and once again we're taking the whole firearms portion out of this because we just really believe it's a distraction from the overall intent of the training, which is really developing your situational awareness to operational awareness.
Yeah, I agree. Operational awareness has more value than firearms training. You go to your local gun ranges, go to other guys that's what they do and get your live fire portion of it. But the operational situational awareness and the resiliency training, that's something you're not going to find very often. And that's what's going to have more value at the end of the day.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Jamie, it's been a pleasure, man. I'll speak to you here in a few days. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. You can find this at gsradio.net, KYH Radio 540 AM. It'll be on Rumble, YouTube, and the Heroes Nation app. Ladies and gentlemen, stay frosty. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.